You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 18th of November. The Jazz fall in Memphis, get ready for Minnesota, and we wander around the league for a status check after another weekend. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. Hope things are good on your end. Aaron Falk wrote a nice little piece, not little actually, just really well done piece, at utahjazz.com. about Mike Conley and all he did with Memphis. If you didn't catch that, it's worth going to grab. Jazz fall in Memphis. Get ready for Minnesota. We'll get you ready for both of those storylines today. Hope you're doing great. I got to share a really, really funny story. And maybe this will actually come to some end result. So Jeff Snyder is the host of Locked On Dodgers on the Locked On Podcast Network. And he actually, of all things, lives, I think, in Pleasant Grove, Utah. So he emails me and says, hey, I'm coming to the game. Jeff and I have actually not met in person. I've seen pictures of him, kind of know what I think he looks like, but I don't really know. And so I get to, this is a while back, I get to a game and I'm running kind of crazy before the game. And there's a guy sitting there and he says hi to me. And I say, hi, Jeff. And he says, hey. And he acts kind of surprised. And I said, hey, I'll be circling back to grab you. In a minute, hey, where are your kids? And he tells me that his kids are over there. And I'm like, cool. So I say hi to him. I run and do the things I'm doing. And then do my on the floor with Ron. And do, you know, really try to do the best I possibly can to get everything done. And I want to get back and see Jeff Snyder. Does a great job with Locked On Dodgers. And even though he's a Dodger fan, which, you know, probably means he'll burn in hell. But, you know, I figured that I should at least be nice to this guy. So... and he does a great job of the show. So anyway, so I yell up through the crowd, Jeff! And the guy turns around and I say, hey, where are your kids? And I had at one point I couldn't find him, so I had texted Jeff, who had texted me, and hey, where'd you go? And so anyway, so this Jeff comes back with his kids, and I take him down onto the floor, and I take a picture of them on the floor, and then some guy kind of strangely has his kid, like, run into the group, even though he's not a part of it, and has his kid in this group with pictures, which was really strange, but we can move on from that. And I then take the pictures, talk to the family for a few minutes, say thanks a lot, and say, see you later, Jeff. And then I take the pictures that I just taken of the kids on the floor and text them to Jeff. And I get a text back that says, who are they? So whoever this Jeff was that I took onto the kids onto the floor was not the Jeff I was looking for. And I have a bunch of pictures in my phone from some guy whose name just, I guess, happens to be Jeff. And I happened to have grabbed his kids and he must have thought it was really weird and he never said anything. And like, I remember at one point they're like, oh, he's a huge fan. I was like, oh, that's nice. I was like, God, that's kind of weird. He's a huge fan. He kind of works with us. Like, so then I got the text from Jeff Snyder who said, well, I'm over here. And I actually then went and met the real Jeff Snyder and his kid. And he went to a Jazz game wearing a Dodgers shirt. I got over it. For those who don't know, I'm a huge Giants fan. So anyway, just a totally hysterical story. I don't actually know if I've ever deleted these pictures or not. But I have I had all these pictures. I might have deleted them by now of these various kids. Oh no, I still have them. Who are these children? One of them I know is not related to the others. Yeah, I still have three pictures of these four kids that actually are not who I thought they were. So anyway, I actually have a sneaking suspicion that I'm going to find out somehow who they are and through this silly story. Let's get to the story here. Interesting little thing, few things going on with the Jazz. We are a pretty good first quarter team. And we have suddenly got a little bugaboo going on in the second quarter. We are 29th in the league offensively in second quarters. We are number one defensively, so we're middle of the pack, 14th overall. Our offense has still not kicked in yet. We are ranked 22nd in the league offensively, and I'm trying to figure it out. So early on, my theory was that if you're high in turnovers and you're high in low in rebounds, it's almost impossible to be a good offensive team. So we're 20th now in turnovers. We've taken care of that, and we're 26th in defensive rebounds. The really big problem we have is after being the number one QSQ team in the league, shot quality, we have dipped to 23rd. We're 20th in the league in three attempts. We are actually shooting pretty well, but let me explain why QSQ is pretty important. QSI is what the best shooting teams do, shooting compared to average. And so if we go back to last 2 years combined, give ourselves a pretty substantial sample size here. And I know I'm incessant on shot distribution, but this is what. The Warriors were the best shooting team in the league. They were an outlier by a long shot. They shot 4.5 percentage points above what an average players would have shot with a shot. There were three teams that were above two the last 2 years combined: San Antonio, Toronto, and Minnesota, probably because of Cat. And then kind of everybody else is within one. And then on the downside of this is over the last 2 years, there's actually only about five teams that are below average, interestingly enough: Atlanta, Oklahoma City, Memphis, Detroit, Utah, were below average. So if you kind of look at this, that what the margin from the 26th team in the league to the fifth team in the league, okay, so or sixth team league. So if you take out the top 15%, between those two teams is about 2 percentage points. Now, if you want to widen it out, take the Warriors out as an outlier, take the two top teams, and you want to stretch out, then it's almost 3 percentage points. But no matter how good or bad a team is, the difference between their actual shooting percentage and the shot quality they get only ranges about 3 percentage points. Does that make sense? The standard deviation between those things are about 3 percentage points. So when you suddenly have our QSQ is not particularly good right now, our shot quality, quantified shot quality, is down at 23rd in the league. If we got hot and we're the best shooting team in the league and we're 2 percentage points better, then we'd be like overall shooting, we would be 50.5 QSQ. So we'd be 52.5 in effective field goal percentage if we got really, really hot. And that would make us the 11th best shooting team in the league. That's what we are. Kind of. Like, we're 12th going into last night. Now we slipped a little. We're actually shooting it great. We're plus 1.5. In the realm of the whole season, the chances of us being much more than 2 or 3 percentage points better than what our actual QSQ is pretty limited. Right? Because that's the standard deviation of where regular what teams do. And so when you our inability right now to get the shots and the open looks that we're used to getting is having a huge impact on our offense. The other night against the Memphis Grizzlies, we had a second quarter that was as poor a shooting quarter as any, or QSQ quarter, as any team in the NBA. Kind of just didn't get good looks. First quarter of that game was actually the offense the way we all want to see it. We had these incredible open looks. We didn't make them. And then in the second quarter, we actually went the other direction. So the first thing we've got to try to figure out as a team is how we're going to get this number back up. We had a good QSQ in night one against Oklahoma City, a good QSQ in night three against Sacramento, good shot quality against the Warriors, and just have not been able to maintain that. And I went and looked at the game against Brooklyn and saw nine circumstances, as I talked about in the first half, where our eyes weren't out for three-point shots. They were out in the first quarter the other night. We just didn't knock them down. And then the second quarter, something went funky. And we had literally the worst shot quality of any team in the league in a given quarter all year. And so it's a really big discipline that we have to have. And it goes back to something I've talked about all year long, and we'll get back to that as we continue. Today's show is brought to you in part by Homie. They are revolutionizing the real estate world and changing the home buying experience. They've also got a fun promotion going with Utah Jazz right now where you're going to get to clear out a locker. We'll get you some news about that coming up. But Homie can also help you buy any home. I've told you a lot about how Homie can help you sell a home. But Homie can help you buy a home as well. Just text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. And you'll be connected with a Homie agent to help you find your dream home, tour homes, make offers, negotiate the best deal, and work to get you $5,000 back. You can also go to homie.com and request a tour of any home for sale with a click of a button. But if you text LOCK to L-O-C-K-E to 88588, an experienced local Homie agent will help you every step of the way, answer the questions for you, so you can buy a house with Homie and save thousands. Remember, it is not free to buy a home. Instead, it's you pay the money for their agent, and whatever agent you choose to hire. It's money that pays both homes, and that's why Homie is giving you $5,000 back. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E to 88588. That's 88588. Jazz and the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight. Tickets are still available for that one at UtahJazz.com. And then I pack my away luggage again, and we head back to Minnesota. By the way, Away creates thoughtful products designed to change your world. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/lockedon. Use the promo code LOCKEDON during checkout. You can also get all of the Locked On Podcast Network offers available for you at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/offers for all the deals that are out there for you as a listener. So we are so excited about this team. The numbers, the metrics, they're all still real. And I do still think, it's hard for me to fathom this team offensively is not going to get it right. The league is changing the way they're defending. So that's a huge part of what's going on here, is that the league is just taking away the rim. Rudy's been amazing recently, and we're still getting some of those looks, and they're more contested than they have been, and so they're a little more difficult. The second thing I would jump out here is I just think we have forgotten something that we talked about in the offseason, is how much each and every one of these guys has to adapt. You know, it's just Donovan was playing point guard all of the time in the second unit last year, or most of the time in the second unit. And even when Ricky was on the floor, now Mike has the ball a lot. That's an adjustment. Mike is obviously going through a tremendous adjustment in changing how he plays and what he does and how often he has the ball in his hands and what kind of shots he's getting and what he's doing. Jeff Green is going through a tremendous adjustment from being a guy who played 27 minutes a night to a guy who's playing about 17 minutes a night and is not getting anywhere near the amount of, he went from 27 to 19, and in turn he's shooting 33% right now. He's not comfortable with it, and I don't think he expected to only play 19 minutes a night. And, he started 44 games last year and thought there was probably a chance he was going to start here. And so it's different for him. Joe Ingles is going through a tremendous adjustment from, starting and getting looks, and his looks are different. Joe Ingles has taken Where's this note? I had this note. Joe Ingles, let me see if I can find this for you, has taken 10 tightly guarded threes already this year. Last year, he took 26 the entire year, and the year before, he took 19 the entire year. So he's taking basically, he's on pace for 80 of them. Last year, he took 26, and the year before, he took 19. And he doesn't make them. It's 2 of 10. Year before, he's 4 of 26. Year before, he's 4 of 19. Joe Ingles is playing with guys that don't pass very much. Jeff Green's not a passer. Never averaged more than 2 assists in a season. Emmanuel Mudiay is not a passer. He's a scorer. Emmanuel Mudiay is going through a tremendous transition from one thing to another. Emmanuel Mudiay was playing 27 minutes a night, started 42 games last year. He's played 30 a few years ago. He's now playing 17. He's getting a shot every minute and a half or 2 minutes, and that's about what he got last year too. So he's still playing his game. Boyan might be the guy who's got the least adjustment. He's just so cool and collected. He just figures he'll get his, and they'll come. He's probably having more things run to him. He's taking more shots, and his adjustment is probably that he's got a larger role than he's had before. But everybody else is still adjusting and being asked to do a little bit something different. And so there's just not a rhythm, and eventually these guys are going to get it. Like, they're going to understand that, oh, I have to do this, and that's, and it's, I think what's hard for them truly is that because all of them are so good and all of them have been number one options and all of them have been kind of elite level at some point in time, that when it gets down to it, they think the right thing for them to do is what they've always done because that's what's worked. And it's pretty hard to quibble with that, frankly. And so therefore it's hard to ask, Boyan to drive to the basket with eyes out. Why? Like, he scored 20 points a game. It's hard to ask Mike to Nash dribble. Why? I've never done that. So these are things where I just think eventually we're going to see each of these guys adapting to the way the Jazz play. They've also just had so little practice time that's a part of it. So it's been, it's surprising to me. And just some of the time where, obviously this is the big one for me, but the shot quality stuff we just talked about, that, you have these games where, as good as this team is at shooting, if your shot quality is not good, it's really, really hard to have an elite level offensive game. They'll get there, right? I mean, it's not like our head coach is incapable of getting them there. He had them as the number one shot quality team in the league last year. So, like, we'll get there. It's just everyone's got to understand what's going on and get that done. All right. Minnesota. They're interesting. 13th ranked offense, 17th ranked defense. They're playing in transition a lot and not very good at it. They take the third most amount of threes and they don't make them. They shoot 28th in the league, or 7th most amount of threes, and they shoot 28th in the league at it. Their defensive effective field goal percentage is kind of just right at 20. They're 20th in both offensive and defensive. Karl Anthony Towns is incredible. 27 points a game, 12 rebounds. He is taking 8 threes a game right now. And that is going to be a really tough task for Rudy Gobert. Now, Nikola Jokic is like this too, and Gobert's length actually bothered Jokic enough that he didn't get comfortable taking shots against him. Towns has a little bit of a quicker release. He's a better shooter. He's had 3 straight years over 40% from 3. So that'll be the tough. Towns this year has killed the East and been bad against the West. He's shooting 58% from the field and 55% from 3 against the East. And he's shooting 44% against the West and 30% from 3. Their bench is interesting. I kind of like a lot of their guys. Like, I like Jake Layman. I like Noah Vonleh. I like Josh Okogie, but it's also, probably an area of the game where we need to take advantage. Andrew Wiggins is on the injured list. His grandmother passed away. It's not clear whether he will play or not. I kind of suspect he will, even though he's on the injured list, but I have no idea what the grieving process is, so it's probably out of line for me to say that. The way I looked at it, I suspected that he would be back for this one. So we will have to see whether or not That turns out to be true. But he has been surprisingly good this year, considering his lack of smart shots in the past. His effective field goal percentage, which weighs three-point shooting, has gone from 46% to 54% this year. Their numbers are a little skewed because Wiggins didn't play the last two games, and they lost their last two both by 20. So they're going to come out firing. They feasted early in the year on Eastern Conference teams, and that made them a good, that helped them a little bit. Final thought on the loss to Memphis. That's not a great loss. Frankly, you've got to probably beat Memphis. You're not going to get them all four times, though, so you got to go beat them next time and then go beat them the next two times at home and win three out of four against Memphis. Ja Morant is the real deal and is super impressive. And the Jazz fourth quarter offense actually was pretty good. They got pretty darn good looks and got what they wanted to get and just couldn't get the stops that they usually get. And then on the last play, obviously, we think he got fouled. But you'd like to avoid that. Jay hit a three after, Jay had the game you'd expect, 11 points, 10 rebounds, hit 3 of 6 from three against us. Rudy is just incredible right now. If you haven't followed what Rudy's done, is in the last three games, Rudy Gobert is 28 of 33 from the floor. 28 of 33. His last seven games, he had 14 or more rebounds in every game. He's averaging 20 points and 15 rebounds over the last three games. He had 5 blocks in that game as well. Mike had another tough night, but he was plus 7. And Tony Bradley really struggled. I don't know. The one thing Quinn might consider is you play Jeff Green at center, and that allows you to play Dante. And you're playing Dante instead of Tony Bradley minutes now that Dante's available. So that might be, keep an eye on that. That's a possibility to see as a way to get things done. Now, you're also small, but Tony's not putting up a lot of rim resistance right now, so I'm not sure the alternative actually matters a great deal there. Tony's done some good things. He's begun to struggle defensively, and teams know he's in the game, and are, the scouting report's beginning to get out, and they're coming right to him. Let's take a run. We'll take a run around the NBA as well. I feel like I'm not giving enough analysis on that game. Actually, I mean, really, to me, we just kind of lost our bearings in that second quarter. Got outscored by 8 in that second quarter. Worked our way back. Played a pretty good game late. Ja Morant was amazing in the fourth quarter. And we just didn't, we didn't get enough, kind of went back and forth. We missed some shots. Mike forced one up, I thought, with about 3:12 left that would have helped out. Bojan makes a big three. Donovan didn't get a great look with 1:19 left. But you're not going to score every time down, and we generally kind of did on a bunch of them, and they did too. Jay Crowder hit a massive three. With probably about 3 or 4 minutes left, that was a big one. But just, you're playing close games, ball bounces one way or another. I don't have the great analysis. It's just that second quarter was not good. I think cost us the ball game, and the shot selection was way offline of what we wanted to have in that time period. The, show today is brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy, located out in Woods Cross, been in Utah for over 90 years. Chevy and America and Utah and the Murdochs, they've all been working together. I'm driving the Blazer. I have gotten more compliments driving the Chevy Blazer right now than maybe any car I've driven of the Chevys. I mean, people know the Colorado and Silverado, both trucks, which I absolutely loved. And the Blazer is just, and even the other night when we came back from Memphis, got in the car, I was like, this is a good-looking car. Drives great, has a really nice feel to it, and frankly, just got a good look to it. Check it out. It's the new Chevy Blazer along with the Equinox. The Tahoe, the Suburban. Those are Chevy standards. It's all part of what the Murdochs bring, also in Logan and in Woods Cross. 90-plus years, Chevy and the Murdochs in Utah together. Find out what the no regrets policy is all about as you get another great experience with the Murdochs. It is Murdoch Chevy. Say hi to Ben when you stop by and visit Murdoch Chevy. Hollinger and Duncan is out today. Make sure you go grab that when we're done. They're doing organizational list. If you didn't catch Monday, they talked about the Jazz organization and put it in one of the elite organizations in the NBA in the episode a week ago. So if you didn't catch that, go listen to Hollinger and Duncan on the Locked On Podcast Network. I thought it'd be fun. We're sitting, you know, we're beginning to get enough of a sample size. So let's take a little look at things, see what's interesting. Offensively, the five best teams in the NBA, Dallas, Boston, Washington, Phoenix, Houston. A little surprising, right? I don't think we had Washington there. They're just by far, they're like the worst defensive team as well. Boston, not turning the ball over at all, shooting it pretty well, but not great. They're really just not turning it over at all, like an incredibly low rate, and that's leading them to be as good as any offensive team in the league. Same thing with Dallas right now. Dallas is offensive rebounding and turning over, but not shooting it great. It's interesting that a bunch of the teams in the top offensive teams in the league right now are not high shooting teams, which is just really strange. You wonder whether that's sustainable or not. Houston is fifth offensively. Now they've moved to 16th defensively. They may have put this thing together. The Clippers are sixth. The surprise on the defensive end, Denver has, or on the offensive end, Denver's finally put it together. They're moving up to 17th with their blowout win of Memphis. And the defensive, the offensive surprise right now, I would say, is the Jazz. 22nd in the league. The bottom teams are New York, Atlanta, Chicago, Orlando, Memphis, Cleveland, Golden State, Oklahoma City. It's not really a big surprise. Sacramento being with Utah is probably a little bit of a surprise there. On the defensive end of things, the best team in the NBA is still the Jazz. The Lakers are 2, Miami's 3, Milwaukee's 4, Toronto's 5. I'm not sure any of that's a surprise. Denver holding at 6 probably is. Their system seems to be doing a great job and they're the third best team in the league defending the shot. Orlando at 7 is not surprising. Houston at 8 is. Phoenix at 8 is. So to Phoenix's credit, they keep doing that. Bad defensive teams, really not much of any surprise. New Orleans is much worse than I think anyone thought. San Antonio at 23rd is probably a little bit of a surprise there. They are not forcing any turnovers at all. They're equally on the other side of that. The overall differential best teams in the league right now, the Lakers are number 1, Milwaukee is 2, Boston is 3, Phoenix is holding at 4, Miami 5, Clippers 6, Toronto 7, Utah 8, Denver 9, Houston 10. You know, Phoenix at 4 is certainly a surprise. Miami is only a surprise in the sense, actually, they're not that big a surprise to me, frankly. I mean, the margin that they're at 7 is probably a surprise, but I thought they'd be the number one defensive team in the league. I had them as a home court advantage team in the Eastern Conference, so that's not a huge surprise to me. Philadelphia, I think, scuffling at 18th offensively and 11th defensively is probably a little bit of a surprise. They don't seem quite right. Who's getting lucky? So if you have heard me talk in the past that there's a level of standard deviation on three-point shots and mid-range shots where teams will equalize out. So if someone's shooting particularly well, it probably comes back to life. And if somebody is getting shot against particularly well, it probably comes back to life. So Detroit is shooting 42% on all three-point shots. That seems unlikely to last. Atlanta and Orlando and Minnesota are all at 31%. That seems unlikely to last. They'll probably, and Cleveland's at 32. Those teams will probably get a little bit better. Corner threes, Detroit is making 48% of their corner threes. New York's making 48% of their corner threes. And New Orleans is making 46. That's too high to last for the entire season. Minnesota's only making 23% of their corner threes. The next closest in the league is 31%. They are going to have a good corner three game here pretty soon and get a win out of it. Hopefully not tonight. All right, defensively is where it really comes to fruition. The Clippers are getting unnaturally lucky, as is Denver on mid-range shots. Teams are shooting just 33%. On mid-range, those numbers will go up. The next closest is 35. Teams that are getting unlucky are Washington, Sacramento, particularly Washington, Sacramento, and Oklahoma City and Brooklyn are getting unlucky on the mid-range shot. Particularly the long mid-range shot teams are shooting 50% against Washington. So that will straighten out a little bit. 46% against Atlanta. That's that's not likely, as teams are shooting 27% of the mid-range against the Clippers. 32% is the next Dallas, so that will... Clippers are getting a little lucky. Three-point shooting, Utah and Miami are getting lucky right now. Teams are shooting just 30% against both the Jazz and the Heat. That will move up to 34, 35 by the end of the season. It just does. The Jazz specifically are getting lucky on corner threes, where teams are just shooting 24% on corner threes. So, I hate to say this, but here's what's going to happen tonight. The Jazz are allowing 24% on corner threes, which is an unnatural number. The Minnesota Timberwolves are making 23% on corner threes, which is an unnatural number. And there's a decent chance that corner three shooting will equalize tonight, just the way numbers work. Let's hope that's not the case. There's your geek ending for this one. I'm David. This has been Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/offers to find out all the offers that are out there. Josh Lloyd did a nice Locked On NBA today where he goes through the biggest stories with local experts. So tell your smart device right now to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On NBA. Have a great day.